Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And today, Jeff Cobb makes his Talk is Jericho debut. He's talking about his experience as an Olympic wrestler representing the country of Guam and Athens, Greece in 2004, one of only four athletes from the entire country of Guam at the Olympics. You hear how he ended up wrestling for Guam, even though he grew up in Hawaii. He talks about getting started in wrestling, his love of Hulk Hogan, what finally made him leave Hawaii to pursue a career in California. He's got great stories about his WWE tryout, why he passed up Tough Enough, signing with Ring of Honor, wrestling in Japan, main eventing in Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, PWG, and this Friday, June 28th, he's main eventing against Matt Taven for the ROH World Heavyweight Championship at Best in the World. That's coming to you from Baltimore, Maryland, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. You can order it on Honor Club. Jeff's going to talk all about Ring of Honor and all about his illustrious up-and-coming killer career right here, right now on Talk is Jericho.
I was listening because a new one came out, the Mandela Effect.
Right? Yeah. That's crazy, huh?
It's so true. Like, now I think about it.
There's a lot of, we were talking about that last night. We were downstairs in the bar with like Kazarian and Daniels and everybody, and talking about the Mandela Effect and how it's really like everyone goes like, "Oh, really? I didn't even think about that." Like the Queen, we are the champions of the world, and that's been taken off, or the Berenstain Bears, or
that's the one. That's, I remember as a kid, that was my favorite book to rent or to borrow out of the library, and I'd always sprint there. And it was the Berenstain Bears. And I was like, the Berenstain
Bears? The Berenstain Bears, Berenstain Bears. It's, we're here with Jeff Cobb here in Las Vegas. And we were talking about how you listened to the Flat Earther episode of the show. And you mentioned how those guys, like, they have good points.
They make valid points. Because, again, like, going to, off that podcast, you know, we were told from when we were kids, this is what it is, this is how it goes. This is red, this is blue, whatever, whatever. I'm like, but if you, like, I don't know myself. Like, I had never flew in a rocket or a ship, rocket ship up there.
Right,
and
exactly.
Look down and say, well, you know what? It is a square, or it is a circle. So,
and that's the thing. Cause, and the thing I love about those guys is whenever you give them an argument, they have an answer for it. Mm-hmm. So, whether you believe it or not, those guys do, and they're very well schooled. So, it makes for a very interesting show.
Right. And I think I'm more susceptible to it because if I say something, they have a good answer instead of just shooting me down.
Right.
And that's all. I mean, we don't know. We don't know.
That's all you can ask for when I have my paranormal guests on, why people enjoy it. Because like I said, whether you believe in Sasquatches in the forest or not, when you talk to someone who is convinced that they had an experience, you give them the benefit of the doubt. Okay, well, you're convinced. That's good enough for me. So it makes, like you said, makes for an interesting conversation for sure. Yeah. So speaking of flat earth and being out in the middle of nowhere, the worst segue ever, but you now, it's interesting because you hear a lot about guys coming in to the business and suddenly someone will make a name for themselves and it's very quick. Like Jeff Cobb, I've heard your name everywhere, maybe over the last 6 months or a year or so. It seems like, you know, now you're finally getting a lot of focus and a lot of steam coming from all the way from Hawaii, which was what my segue was. That's a long way.
It's been a crazy, like, I want to say like maybe 2 years where like my bookings have gone crazy, and it's a crazy roller coaster, and I love it. I love every minute of it. I mean, hotels kind of suck after a while, but it just comes with the...
That's part of the job,
yeah,
right?
It's part of the job. But, I mean, at the end of the day, who am I to complain when somebody else is paying for me to fly somewhere and stay at a hotel?
I always say that, yeah, you're getting paid to travel to places where people save their money for years to hopefully get a chance to go to.
Right. Like, I mean, oh my gosh, I've been to Japan maybe 5 times now in the past year and a half, and every time, every tour, it's amazing. I love it every single time.
That's why I met you there. We were at breakfast.
Yeah.
At the Tokyo Dome Hotel, just very briefly. But so what was it over the last couple of years that, kind of put the rocket on your ass, so to speak?
I think it was, I'm just a little bit different than, like, I don't really fly around too much. I think I suplex a lot of people. And
oh, you're a big, blocky guy, yeah.
And I've been fortunate enough to be able to have, like, weird, like, stupid strength where I could, I haven't met somebody I haven't been able to suplex yet. Mm. So very fortunate about that. One day my back's going to give out, and then I have to learn how to work for real. So.
Who's the biggest guy you suplexed?
Jeez, I want to say maybe Fala Ba.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a big guy.
Fala Ba, or even Brian Molinas from the Bouncers and Ring of Honor. Yeah. One of the Christmas specials.
So, oh, yeah, yeah.
That was awesome.
What about the cat from New Japan, the big Fale, Bad Luck Fale?
I haven't had a chance to really tussle with him too much, but, you know, he's on my bucket list.
He's on your suplex list.
Yeah.
Because you came from a very prestigious amateur background.
Yeah, so that was my, well, I mean, I want to sound like, I'm not the brightest person in the world, but at the same time, like my freshman year in high school, like I loved wrestling since I was a kid, like since I could remember.
Pro wrestling, amateur.
Pro wrestling,
gotcha.
Pro wrestling, and then freshman year in high school, I saw flyers for wrestling, and I went, "Holy cat!" Like, oh my gosh! So I saved all my allowance to buy wrestling shoes. I didn't realize wrestling shoes were so expensive, amateur wrestling shoes. And I showed it to my first practice, and I was like, "Wow." I was really dumb.
Because you were expecting a wrestling
ring? Yeah. I was like, well, maybe this is just the first week, and then I can pick my entrance music. And
so you thought there was high school pro wrestling.
What? I didn't know there was amateur wrestling.
Right.
I had no clue. So
So you'd already paid for the shoes.
Yeah, so I stuck with it because I spent $98 on shoes. So.
So, but is that seriously? You said, well, I'm here, might as well give it a try?
Yeah, well, I mean, well, I played basketball first, but then I realized I was short for basketball.
Short and stocky, yeah.
Yeah, so I was like, well, I'll give this wrestling a try. I mean, you never know where it leads to. It led me here, so.
But what? How far did you go in amateur wrestling?
I wrestled in the 2004 Olympics.
No kidding?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
For the United States?
I wrestled for Guam.
Really?
So I moved to Guam middle school.
Uh-huh.
And that's where everything went. Because my mom's side's Filipino. They're from the Philippines. And my grandmother moved from the Philippines to Guam because she had a teaching degree. And for Filipinos, I hate to say it. I don't want to sound like an idiot. But you're either a nurse or a teacher.
Yeah, so, Philippines.
Yeah.
Filipino, yeah.
So my grandmother was a teacher. She taught elementary school for 27 years. And she moved to Guam to get better pay, better living for our family and my mom met my dad, moved to Hawaii, and then we kind of hit a couple snafus, like there was like drugs involved and whatnot, and we lost our house and all that. So, but my grandmother helped us out and took us in, so we moved to Guam.
Okay. So. Now, Guam is like a small island?
It's a tiny island, yeah.
It's a vacation. I know all the Japanese wrestlers go there for vacation.
Yeah, like, because it's pretty close to Japan. It's only like a three and a half hour flight, so... We get a lot of Korean tourists, Japanese tourists coming over and just soaking up the sun.
So, but they have amateur wrestling in Guam.
Yeah.
My goodness. So how many guys was there on your team representing
for wrestling?
Guam?
Just me. I was the only one that qualified in 2004.
Wow.
So
and that was where was 2004?
Athens, Greece.
Well, this is interesting. So tell us what it's like to be in the Olympics.
Well, so when everybody asked me that question, I never know what to say. Besides the fact that it was a great honor. I usually tell them the stories of how it's kind of like a circus almost, because you have like a 245 pound female that can throw us, I think it's like a 12 pound shot put,
right,
20-30 feet, and then you also have a 4'9" 1% body fat gymnast that can lift her own body weight and hold it in a it's just the craziest see if you, I mean, you know Mark Henry.
Yeah, of course.
Just, okay, imagine him. And then, and he's a small guy compared to, you know what I'm saying? So, like, it's crazy. And then I go to the computer lab, or I do drop off laundry, go to the computer, and Yao Ming is sitting in a little computer chair just typing away, and he just looks so out of place.
Right.
It's so wonderful. Is it like a two-week thing where you go and stay there for the whole time?
I was there for a month.
For a month,
yeah.
Wow.
The game started, I believe it was like August 2nd, but I didn't compete. Wrestling wasn't scheduled until like August 24th. So you still
keep training? And
yeah, which was horrible. They had amazing food from around the world, Asian cuisine, anything you name it, it was there. And they also had, so it was weird when I think about this too, is they had a 24-hour McDonald's that you can get whatever you want as long as you sign their book.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
As an Olympic athlete.
Yeah. So I was like, I mean, you know, the best athletes in the world. You want a Big Mac?
So when you get chosen to be in the Olympics or win whatever nationals that you go, does the government pay for you to go? Does the Olympics pay? Do you have to pay for yourself?
Well, our government paid for me, but it wasn't like I was getting money for it. Like they paid like the travel,
their expenses.
The lodging. Yeah, the expenses. And then they gave me like a little stipend, but it wasn't enough to, you know, I mean, it's not like I was eating like great meals every, I mean, I'd make enough just to make sure I was eating healthy and whatnot. So like I wasn't spending $500 a day on stuff.
I got you. Yeah. So how many people were on the Guam team, Olympic team total?
2004 was four. There was a swimmer, two track and field, and then a wrestler.
Is it just because you're the best in Guam, or did you have to beat some other countries to get in there?
So like every, they have regions, I guess, if you will, or continental championships. So like America is a part of Canada and Mexico. And then like Guam, we were part of Oceania region, which is like Australia, New Zealand, smaller islands and whatnot. So usually they go by, like if you're in the wrestling world championships the year prior, the top 10 will automatically qualify a spot for that weight class and country. And then as it gets closer, then each country that, like it's the U.S., let's say they qualified a spot, then the April prior to the Olympics, they'll have a tournament to see who represents the spot. So if you qualify the spot, it doesn't mean you're going to the Olympics. You'd have to win another one.
Gotcha.
Again. Yeah. So,
who did you wrestle in the Olympics?
I wrestled a wrestler from Germany who was Russian, who seceded from Russia because he couldn't make the national team. So he's a Russian guy wrestling for Germany. And I wrestled Yoel Romero from, he's in the UFC now, I believe, like at 205 or something.
What country was he?
He is from Cuba.
So is this this heavyweight class?
Yeah. Well, actually, no. I wrestled 184.
Oh, wow.
Or 84 kilos.
Okay, wow.
That was many years ago.
Many Big Macs ago?
Yes.
did you win a couple matches?
I did not. Oh, okay. I lost to the German guy, and then I lost to Yoel Romero. So
it's like a two elimination.
Yeah, we're at the time, it was pool round robin, I guess, or pool play. Now it's a straight bracket, I believe. So.
Well, still, at least you got to go to the Olympics.
Yeah.
And I was going to ask you, when you mentioned you grew up in Hawaii and that you were a big wrestling fan, was it on TV? Did you go to the shows in Hawaii?
TV. I remember begging my dad to stay awake on Monday because I believe it was called Prime Time.
Yeah.
I used to stay up and watch that all the time. Then I ended up falling asleep because I was young.
Yeah.
And then anytime they came to Hawaii, I was like, oh my God, Dad, please, can we go? And sure enough, my dad took me every single time.
What years was that? I'm trying to think.
It's like, I remember going in the late 80s.
Okay.
So they would come at least maybe two or three times a year.
Gotcha,
back then. The last one I went to, you wrestled there, and you had the, I don't know why more people don't do this in Hawaii, but like you're, like, the fans are chanting Mahu.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, well, you know, if Mahu means I'm the greatest and I'm the biggest Mahu ever. Not, and it got such a great reaction. I was dying.
And Mahu means? It's like a lady boy or something.
Yeah. I don't know how to say it.
It's like a lady boy, like a guy who is effeminately gay or something on those lines. Yeah. Mahu.
And it popped me.
You know, it's so funny. I did that same thing the last time I was there, like in 2016, I think. I just keep doing it every time.
It gets a great reaction. I don't think nobody does that.
I did it in Australia with Wanker. If Wanker means I'm cool, then yes, I'm the biggest Wanker. I'm a Wanker, baby. So what finally prompted you to get into to training for wrestling, get into the business?
I've always wanted to do it. I just never, I graduated high school, and then we moved back to Hawaii for a little bit. And I was like, you know, I'm going to do it. you know, just right out of high school, I think I can do it. It's like 17. Mm-hmm. And I called the local promotion. His name was Lars Anderson.
Wow.
Yeah. And really? He was running a company in Hawaii. And he's like, yeah, if you just bring me $3,000 and show up on Monday. It's like, $3,000? We're going to get $3,000. I'm 17 years old right out of high school. So I got to put it on the back burner for a while. So, but I've always wanted to do it. And eventually I ended up going to college and then graduating college, moved back to Hawaii. And I was like, you know, it's now or never.
So who did you train with?
I trained with a local company in Hawaii called Action Zone Wrestling. There was two companies, actually. There's that one, and there's an NWA affiliate at the time. But it's, you know.
Right.
It was the older NWA affiliate. And I just went with them because they, like, I started working at a gym, and all the wrestlers came to that gym. And I was like, oh, man, it's got to be a sign. So.
Mm-hmm. Because Hawaii is like, it's interesting when you say there's a promotion there because it's such a small island. Mm-hmm. Like, how many shows would you do with that promotion and where would you do them?
Well, when I first started training, we'd had a small, like a Muay Thai gym that we partnered with and maybe 30, 40 people max that could fit in there.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd run that. And then like two or three times a year, we would do a ballroom as our, like, our bigger shows.
In Honolulu?
Yeah. And then it would just. Then we just do that every two or three times a year, like the bigger shows. Like,
yeah, but would you go to like some of the other islands and run shows?
Or? No, well, I know they used to do that back in the day, but they used to. It used to be easier when there was. They had this little ferry that used to take you to different islands, but people were complaining that it killed dolphins or whatever. I don't know if that's true or not, but
yeah.
So they used to put the ring truck on there and go to the other islands, but then. By the time I came around, they stopped doing that altogether.
So when you grew up in Hawaii, were you doing like were you surfing? Were you spearfishing? Were you doing anything like that?
I was doing none of those. I have a fear of water deeper than my head. I panic attack. I brought my girlfriend to Hawaii like 3 years ago, and she wanted to go snorkeling with turtles and stuff. And I was like, oh God. So I took her, and as soon as I jumped in the water, instantly hyperventilating. But trying to look manly, of course.
Of course, of course.
As there's a turtle coming at me, I'm like, no.
You're like the worst Hawaiian ever. Even your last name, Cobb, right? Like
because my dad's white. So.
Okay. Okay, so you're half white, half Filipino,
yeah,
and just grew up in Hawaii.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Well, Japanese. My dad was it's so weird.
Oh, like, so you're half Japanese, half white, half Filipino, half
quarter Japanese.
Yeah.
Quarter.
Yeah, sorry.
Quarter and half and half Filipino.
Oh, okay.
But according to, so all the, well, I don't know, I segue so it's much, fine, I'm no sorry, problem, but no like this last tag league for New Japan, a bunch of the boys were getting this 23andMe stuff. So
what is it called?
23andMe.
What is that?
You spit in this little vial container thing, you send it off, and it breaks down everything that you are.
Like a DNA test.
Yes, gotcha. Exactly. And it messed me up. Because, well, it didn't really mess me up too bad, but I was like, I'm 7% Korean. All right, cool.
That's interesting. So all the guys were doing it?
Yeah, like all the guys, like Juice was doing it.
Uh-huh.
Like Juice, Finley, Rocky Romero were all doing it. And I was like, I wonder what I am. I was kind of nervous because I didn't want it to like just burst my bubble of what I was. Like, so, but I did it anyways.
You were 25% Mahu.
Yeah. 35, actually.
Yeah, there you go. So so when you're in Hawaii, what finally got you over and onto the mainland to start your career there?
Well, because I was pro wrestling in Hawaii for about 3 years. And then I kind of did everything I could there, and I didn't want to just settle.
Sure.
And then I ended up doing a show in San Francisco with All Pro Wrestling. And I did a show out there, and it was Roland Alexander. And he cried after a match, which is weird. And then the booker at the time was like, hey, man, you got to get out of Hawaii. I think you're pretty good. So I was like, all right, cool. So he hooked me up with a great trainer by the name of Oliver John in Sacramento. And I saved up from that point. I think it was like March we were up there. So March to December, I just saved up everything and then packed up and moved.
Why was Roland crying?
He said it was a really good match, which like now I think about it, like, maybe it was. Maybe he's lying to me. Maybe he just wants me to come and train with him.
Because he passed away years ago, didn't he? Yeah. Wow. So then you start working in the California scene.
Yep. Did all the indies up and down. Like, did when as soon as I moved here, I was like, you know what? I don't have a name, so I don't think I'm going to do anything. So I took anything and everything I could. I worked for free, worked for $10, worked for $20, drove 6 hours to LA back for nothing. So,
and that's what you have to do.
Yeah. I mean, I think it makes you more appreciative of everything. Like, I think you have, I mean, I don't know, but my opinion is I think you have to go through those
mm-hmm.
to,
oh, sure.
I think so.
It makes you appreciate what you have when you go definitely. Through it. And I think, and this is not being a crotchety old man or anything like that, but I think sometimes guys, if they get signed very quickly, for example, and go to NXT in the Performance Center, you're not seeing that side because you're getting paid to train. And yeah, you're driving to towns in Florida, but then, you know, you go to a show in Boston, they bus you around everywhere and everything's all taken care of. Mm-hmm. You're missing that other side of the business, which is the long drives for shit money to appreciate what the business really is.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think a majority of them have ever had to put 5 or 6 in a car and drive for 6 hours. Ugh.
Yeah. And take collection for gas.
And then turn around and go back and like watch up in 5 or whatever. So.
What was your first big break?
I think it was definitely Lucha Underground.
Oh, right. Yeah,
so I always say that my career, like how I got better in the ring, was because of my trainer, Oliver John. Conan actually helped me out a lot. Mm. We did a tryout and I was really bummed because I didn't get it was like a 6-man tag and then the winners or he'd pick to go to the next round or whatever. And I didn't get picked. I just did one match. And I was like, damn. Mm. But then Conan was like, hey man, I like you, man. So yeah, here's my number. I'm gonna keep in contact with you. And again, I was just like, oh man, well, this is probably just BS or whatever. Yeah. But he ended up getting hold of me eventually and just saying, hey man, we're doing this thing in LA. It's called Lucha Underground. Like, would you be interested in it? I was like, heck yeah.
Mm.
So.
And what was your character there?
I was Matanza.
Yeah.
Allegedly, guys, allegedly.
And that was like, because Lucha Underground, like when it first started, I was into it. And then it started, there's so many crazy characters and all this, people are dying. And
right.
So what was the character of Matanza?
I was the brother of Dario Cueto.
Mm-hmm.
And I was possessed by a demon, or a god, I'm sorry. And I was my brother's killing machine.
Hmm.
Whoever he wanted me to kill or whoever pissed him off, I'd go take care of it.
And what kind of a mask did you have?
A leather unbreathable thing. Oh, man. It was just covering, it was like a surgeon's mask, but with very little room to breathe. I was dying on the
That's sucker. Hard. I had to do that one time. I wore a mask for, I was Super Liger. It was like Liger's evil rival. And the mask they gave me originally had a, like a, you could put a straw in it, like a blowhole. And I had to cut the bottom half of the mask off because I couldn't breathe, man. Like, it's hard, especially when you're not used to it.
Right.
Put this on and go out there and work the Tokyo Dome. It was not a good thing.
And you're just recycling hot air.
Yeah.
Your hot air.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Did it take you a while to acclimate to that?
Oh, definitely. And it didn't help that, we took so long breaks in between seasons.
Right.
Whereas, like, we'd film and then I'd get used to it eventually and then we'd break.
Mm.
I was like, okay, cool. And then we'd come back. All right, put this mask back on. I'm like, oh my God.
But so if you work at Lucha Underground, how did you, I'm assuming you got out of that contract? Because the contract, for people that don't know, was like a 7-year non-negotiable, like you are stuck with them for like 7 years or something along those lines?
Yeah, so I signed it. I really appreciate like Chris DeJoseph because he was cool to me.
Mm-hmm.
Where like he called me Conan called me and he said, I'm going to have this guy call you. And it was Chris DeJoseph. He called me. Yeah. Right. And he called me and he said, hey, man, I want to offer you a Lucha Underground contract. And it was literally like a week before I did a WWE tryout.
Oh, okay.
So he told me, he said, hey, listen, I get it. I've worked there for X amount of years. Go do that. If you get signed, great. If you don't, call me back. Was thinking like he's just kicking me to the curb or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I did my tryout. Nothing came out of it. And I called him back and he said, all right, cool. Let's get the ball rolling on this. And I signed with them and started doing this character. And then eventually it just took too long in between seasons where I was like, hey, man.
And you can't really work anywhere else, right?
Yeah. Because, I mean, it's great. On the indies is great. But then you'd also have to fight with promoters about pay and everything like that. Where it's like, hey, I have a set price. And like, oh, well, can you come down? I was like, I just don't want to deal with that. So, like, TV is where you make the most money. So,
sure.
But I can't go any other TV spots because I'm stuck under this contract. So eventually we negotiated a way out.
How are you able to get out of it? Because there's still other guys that can't.
I don't know if it's like the Lucha team or the El Rey team or whatnot, but I had a lawyer draft up a termination letter, and he's a big entertainment lawyer, because they just like stopped returning emails and all that. And and I get like, I emailed Chris DeJoso. I'm like, hey man, what's going on? And he's like, listen, I just write the stuff. Right. So I didn't want to get him involved in that side of it. So I'd always like email the office or anybody up there, and they would never return my calls. So eventually I just got frustrated with it and got a hold of an entertainment lawyer. And then he looked, he's like, yeah, this contract is horrible. Right. So he drafted a letter, because at that point we were 18 months without work. So he drafted a lawyer, he sent it in. Lo and behold, 2 days later, get a phone call. Hey, Jeff, how's it going, man? I was like, oh, come on. So, and then eventually I said, hey, listen, I just want to be done with this. So they ended up just saying, all right, cool, we can release you. Just come back for season 4, film an ending to your character, and then...
I'm surprised more guys don't do that, because, you know, you read about the guys that are stuck under it. But I read even just today that somebody, I remember it was Hijo del Fantasma, has done the same thing, you know, filed a grievance to, because, you know, that seems like it would be illegal to do that if you're not using the guys.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, for the 20 months we were off, we weren't getting anything.
You're not getting any money?
No, nothing.
Really?
Yeah.
So you're just getting paid when you work?
Yeah, so we'd get paid per episode, like,
right,
the day of, and we get a check for the following pay period or whatever.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and then, like, all right, we'll see you guys in, well, we don't know when we're coming back, so we'll see you when we come back. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, and then they would always tell us, like, all right, well, don't take any bookings in December, because we're going to come back in December. And so I wouldn't take any bookings. And then, like, November comes around, I was like, oh, guys, we're pushing back to January. I'm like, I lost out on half of December.
Right.
So. And that was just kind of the writing on the wall for me. And, you know, I was like, if I was like 24, I wouldn't really care. But I'm a little bit older, so I mean, my time, my window's a little bit shorter.
Well,
you know,
plus, now you get more momentum, too. It's all about timing in this business, right? How did Matanza, how did it end?
They had this Brian Cage eventually. Well, John Morrison ended up with this Infinity Gauntlet thing. And then he used it to beat me in a match. And then Black Lotus, or Angela Fong, ended up taking it and ripping my heart out.
Right on.
Which was I did all the action stunts in that one, by the way.
There's no stuntmen for Lucha.
No, just me.
Did they pull your heart out?
Yeah.
You saw it?
Yeah, it was wonderful.
That's
great. I died right in front of her. She was
beating heart.
Yes. That's great.
That is pretty cool, man. So, but like you said, I mean, I think I still can't believe that those guys are still stuck there. But it's good that you are not there, because, like you mentioned, being on TV is kind of where you get more notoriety and get more bigger money. And now here you are with Ring of Honor and New Japan. So, I mean, there's two big companies that you're working for.
Yeah, I mean, that was a blessing in disguise too, because I remember back in like when I right before I even debuted with New Japan, I remember I was in talks with them, and then. Tiger Torres like, you don't want to use Lucha Underground guys. And I was like, I'm not there anymore. I promise. And I just, well, he's like, hey man, still with that Lucha?
Yeah.
Everybody's got a Tiger.
Yeah, Torres. Totally. Yeah. Like, hey man, you drunk man. So, when, did you go to the dojo in LA to meet up with the New Japan guys, or how did that happen?
I think, at a PWG Battle of Los Angeles show, Tiger Torrey came and he saw me wrestling. And then he just started talking to me a little bit. And then I ended up getting booked for 2017's Tag League Tour. Mm-hmm. And then it just kept going from there.
It's interesting when you mentioned PWG. It was obviously such a hot company. But it's going to be harder and harder for them now because everyone's getting signed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's less guys available to work there.
But I think it's good, just like, or not, I don't want to say good, but like, I think it opens up avenues for them to go, like, think outside the box and like, all right, well, let's give this guy a chance or this guy a chance. And I think that's what, like, PWG is. It gave me an opportunity, and it definitely helped my career blow up a little bit. So I think it's a good thing. Like, you know, everybody's all right, cool. Everybody can say, well, PWG, Let's try this guy out.
It reminds me a lot like what ECW used to be, you know, in the 90s, where if you went there and got over, everyone would take notice.
Right. Yeah. And, well, you know, it's exactly. Well, I mean, I guess, well, back then they're probably doing DVDs and PWG still doing DVDs. Yeah. So it's exactly like.
Right. PWG. But it was always in a very small building, right?
Oh, yeah. They moved to a little bit bigger.
Oh, yeah. I heard.
But. It's not the sweat boxes, the Reseda one was.
Because you'd see like it would sell out like in 5 minutes, right, or something like that.
Right.
It'd be like,
even to this day, like with the quote unquote lack of talent or lack of big names, it's still selling out in minutes. So I think they're doing something right.
Who did you work back in those times at PWG?
Like Chris Hero, Trevor Lee, Ricochet, the Bucks. Mm-hmm. So
a lot of guys, everybody basically now, and you are signed in Ring of Honor, but a lot of guys that are in WWE, and you mentioned you had the tryout. Mm-hmm. How did it not go good, or?
So they, I don't know, I thought it was going positive, because like Briscoe was like, hey man, you're a wrestler, right? I like you, kid. Like, yeah. Cool, man. And then I pop billed him out with the same story. I was like, it's like, why'd you become a wrestler? I was like, well, I thought I was pro wrestler. You know?
Yeah.
And then so like, I thought it was going good. Like, they pulled 8 of us to the side to do
this.
Like,
was at the Performance Center?
Yeah, the Performance Center, the three-day one.
Gotcha. So they pulled you to the side.
Yeah, they pulled us aside, did on-camera interviews and all that. And I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. And then started taking pictures of it, like full body and everything. I was like, oh man, this is awesome. This is always what I dreamed about. And then they ended up signing 6 of them. And they offered, Kenny Seaman was like offered me Tough Enough.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, again, if I was in my 20s, mm-hmm. like Tough Enough, sure. But then I was like, you know, I don't know. Tough Enough doesn't, like, there's only maybe like 3 or 4 that came through that system, like the Miz,
oh, yeah,
or Morrison. And I was like,
from the Tough Enough that you got offered in 2015, none of them made it except for, yeah, I think Mandy and Sonya, and maybe Velveteen Dream. Those are the three.
Yeah. So it's like, it's rare. So I mean, I just didn't want to fall in that trap. Mm-hmm. Or not trap, but.
Who were some of the guys that got signed out of those 6?
Rich Swann was in my class.
Oh, okay.
No Way Jose.
Mm-hmm.
One of the Street Profits, Montez Ford.
Okay.
Yeah. He was that sweet high frog splash. He was my roommate, actually.
Oh, yeah?
So I would just bug mess with him. I'm sorry. I just apologize. I still got the videos on my phone. So.
Right. So. But when you said you did the tag league, who was your partner in Japan?
Michael Elgin.
Oh, Elgin. Okay. Right, yeah. On. Oh, yeah. There's a little issue, right? He's got a lot of, he can't keep his mouth shut, that guy.
Like, you know, Hulk Hogan did it right. Like, he messed up. He got off of Twitter. Stay away from Twitter.
Right.
I think sometimes if you get in trouble, just maybe just don't tweet or Facebook or anything.
Because did he tweet or he text somebody or tweet somebody that my partner's not any good or something along those lines?
Yeah. So I was like, well, the funny thing is, like, I'm from Hawaii, so I'm really laid back.
Super chill, yeah.
So that actually happened. I remember reading that at 3 a.m. because for some reason, when you go to Japan, I always wake up at 3 a.m, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning every time. So I got up to use the bathroom, came back, and I, like, my phone was lit up. And I was like, what the heck? And I never get like hundreds of messages from people I haven't seen in a while, like guys in WWE, you know, like, hey man, what's going on? What's going on? I was like, what do you mean, what's going on? Mm-hmm. And then I saw it, I was like, well, that sucks. And then
did somebody screenshot a text?
Yeah. So a bunch of people screenshotted stuff and they'll just send it to me. And I was like, oh, I didn't even know. And I kind of just looked at it and I was like, can't make everybody like me. So,
but that was a text that he had sent to somebody that somebody then kind of
screenshot. Well, he sent it to a girl, and then I guess they had something going on or whatever.
Gotcha. And then
she got mad at him, or I don't know. So I don't want to get
of course that.
But
you,
yeah,
did you talk to him about it?
No, because I don't care. Like, right. I mean, you're never gonna. I look at it as like maybe he was like, oh well, they're bringing this guy in. Like, I'm not gonna take your spot, guy. Mm-hmm. Like, because he's the one with the contract. I don't have a contract.
Sure.
I'm just coming in for this
but
tour.
I would see, I mean, that's probably it, because I've seen your stuff and you're pretty good, man. So it's not the case. Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, I mean, again, this is probably like wrestling's like a land full of insecure people, but
mm-hmm.
like, I don't care.
Well, there's always people that, you know, you come over there and you guys are similar physiques and maybe work a similar way. So then automatically you think, oh, I'm going to lose my spot, which never happens. You lose your own spot.
Right. So, I mean, you know what? Like, and you know, he's a bald white Canadian. I'm a brown big guy. We're totally like two different guys.
Yeah. So now you work there every tour now in New Japan?
Every so often I'll go over there. It's like I've done like about four tours, and I did my first Tokyo Dome this last January. It was amazing.
Was that in the six man?
Yeah.
Who was your partners?
David Finley and Yuji Nagata, which was awesome. I was like, dude, Yuji's my partner. We're not losing.
Yeah.
We ended up losing. But Finley got pinned. Yeah. So it's on him.
Damn Finley.
I know.
Damn Irishman.
Jeez.
Do you like going to Japan?
I love going to Japan. I love like just the culture, the people, how they are. It's just great, man. Like,
yeah,
they're so respectful.
And then what about the style, the wrestling style?
I can see how Tenzan wrestles. I don't even know how old he is now, but he's in his older years. Like how he can wrestle for longevity, and that's what I want. I want longevity, you know, like, and just like their style. It's more of the selling and the wrestling as opposed to the moves, which is great.
Which is the exact opposite of what people used to think about Japanese wrestling. It was very stiff.
And, right.
You know, I mean, those guys can be stiff, but mostly they're just stiff on themselves.
Right.
Taking ridiculous bumps and doing all these weird things. It's like, oh my gosh, don't do that. But it's not get in there and get dropped on your head or get kicked in the face or anything like that.
Right. Like, well, I mean, going back a little bit, like when I first started training, the trainer at the time love the quote unquote strong style, and he's like, yeah, this is how you do forearms. He's like killing me with these forearms, like Jesus. And then, you know, but he's never wrestled in Japan. He just saw the style and thought that's what it was, and that's what I thought it was because of him. Then my first tour of Japan, I'm like, oh my gosh, these guys are amazing.
So light.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, like, am I in the right Japan for this?
But that's the concept of wrestling, though, is you make it look tough, but you don't make, you know, you don't hurt anybody.
Right. And that's what it was. Like, it was perception is reality. I was like, I thought they'd kill each other, and no, it's beautiful. It's great art, man.
Do you do more single stuff now in Japan?
No, actually, no. I do a lot of multis and tags. I did do a singles match when they went to the Cow Palace last year. This is building to myself and Goto in a singles match. So that was it was great to have a singles match, but I mean, I don't mind these.
It would seem that now with, you know, lots of guys leaving and stuff like that, that the door is open for you to start getting more single chance.
I would love to, man.
Yeah.
Like I said, New Japan's been great to me, so I have no complaints.
And you got the perfect like physique for it. Just a big dude. You know, they love big giant guys.
Yeah, I was like, man, everybody's like messed. I don't know if they're ribbing me or not, but like Marty and like a bunch of the New Japan guys, like, oh man, maybe just go to Trunks. I was like, no, I'm never going to Trunks, man.
What do you wear? You wear the singlet, right?
I wear a singlet, yeah, because it hides. It's an illusion, man. But it's like, no, like you look at that, like Takayama had a great career. I was like, yeah, but he was a deadly badass. I'm just then I started thinking, I was like, maybe I should go to Trunks. I'm like, no, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like food too much. I like pizza.
You just pull them up over your like the old timers. Like
Trunks.
Yeah, you see like the Dory Funk guys, you just pull them up past your belly button.
We'll see. It's an upper body game, right?
Yeah, that's right, brother. Tell us what's going on with Ring of Honor.
I'm their television champion.
Yeah, you signed a deal there this year, or
I signed for 1 year. It went into effect January 1st.
That's great.
And then it's it's awesome, man. Like just working with some of the guys there and like learning from guys like Jay Lethal, man. He's like the franchise there. You know what I'm saying? So like he's so good. So just being able to learn from them and then now getting a chance to do more TV stuff as opposed to, like when I was Matanza, I didn't care because they'd say, we'll catch you, don't worry, and just do whatever you want. And because there was no real hard cam in Lucha.
Did they film it more like a movie or something with a
bunch of... they just had camera guys on all four sides. And then for some reason they had one right above the ring.
Oh.
So like if you got pinned, you're staring at a camera, which is weird. So like, we didn't really have to work hard cam and all that. So, but Ring of Honor has been, you know, I'm learning more of that style. So it's great. Like,
which is important. Yeah. Like you said, the hard camera, and find the camera and all that sort of thing.
So,
you don't think about when you're working, you know, in the indies or whatever, it's non-televised, right?
Right. So like, I've been trying to do that more, like before my Ring of Honor contract went to effect was like the last couple months of indies that I had, I was like, okay, I'm trying to work do you guys have a hard cam? Like, which is rare in on the indies, but some of them did. So I try to work that as much as I could. So
it's cool because, you know, with all the stuff that's going on with you know, my company and WWE and Ring of Honor. I like that Ring of Honor signing some good guys. Mm-hmm. You know, they brought you in, they brought PCO in, and now they brought in Bandido, and it's like they're doing a great job of locking in names as well. Mm-hmm. I believe Rush is there too now.
Yeah,
I mean that's crazy.
Yeah, like I think it's like it's a great time to be in wrestling, man. Like wrestling's always been great for me in general, but then now just seeing all, like, I love the fact that people have a chance to go and make a living doing what they love and mm-hmm. doing this profession. So I'm all for it, man.
And don't have to be in the WWE system, which is always the case. Yeah,
well, see, that's the thing too. Is like, I mean, I don't know. I'm probably wrong on this looking. I don't know. But I remember as a kid, because that's all we had in Hawaii was that. And we'd get NWA every so often, but it was more so WWF. And then there was also, like, I think it was, like, Global Wrestling on ESPN or something. Mm-hmm. Like, I think 1-2-3 Kid or Xbox
was there. Down in Texas or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, so those are the only wrestling I could see. Oh, and Glow, but I never wanted to wrestle.
Wrong
then.
Gender, yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, so growing up, I was always like, okay, I have to make a WWE to do anything in this world, you know, to make a living or whatever. But, like, I've been doing pretty darn well, for, like, in the past three, four years, not having been signed to WWE, so like it's crazy.
Yeah,
like, and I thought that was the end all be all, but
well, and that's the whole concept of AEW as well, as guys that did not want to go to WWE that went elsewhere. So you can see that, and like I said, I liked seeing Ring of Honor signing all you guys because it shows, like, you know, they got some money out there too. So like mm-hmm. you mentioned, just more options for everybody.
I think that's great. Like especially like, you know, if there's more places to work. And there's just, I think it just creates more, have to deep down and think of new concepts and all that. So, mm-hmm. It just makes everybody work harder and work better for the industry that we love.
How many days a month do you work for Ring of Honor?
It varies. Like, January, we had 5 shows. February, we have 2.
Wow.
Or 3. Oh, we have 4. I'm sorry. We have 4.
Gotcha.
Then March, we have 2.
Eight. And this is like a yearly deal that you sign
with
them? That's great.
Yeah, so I'm like...
And can you work other places as well?
So right now we can still work PWG.
Okay.
And then overseas independence. Mm-hmm. As long as it's not like certain... Like we can't work Toronto.
Oh, because they, you do a they lot
have
of a market.
Yeah,
Toronto,
we have a lot of... We do a couple of Toronto dates a year. So mm-hmm. we just can't work there. And then so other than that, it's just I work the Ring of Honor. And then when New Japan needs me for a tour, I hop over there. And if there's an indie or two, I can pick up. If I'm not, or if I don't want to work,
mm-hmm.
I want to do something with my lady. We'll go.
That
somewhere.
Helps too. Yeah.
Oh man. And I'm not downplaying or talking negative on like NXT or anything like that, but like, I don't think I'd be able to do that mm-hmm. if I was there, you know, like, well, I guess I want to go to the beach this weekend, or let's go to Long Beach and hang out, or my buddy's getting married. Like, you know, I don't have to ask anybody, can I go?
Right.
You know,
yeah. Like,
I think we're going to go to a wedding. So,
when you did the tryout there, I was going to ask you: was there a lot of like cardiovascular drills? Is that kind of?
Oh my gosh! Yeah, it was crazy. A lot of running the ropes, a lot of rolls, which is great. A lot of Brookside shuffles, which is amazing.
What's a Brookside shuffle?
It's pretty much you put your hands on your head, and you do like a little side shuffle around the ring. You stay close to the ropes. You don't go towards the center. And so you're in the center of the ropes looking directly across, and that's your partner. So you'd have to do the shuffle and try to stay in sync with them. So by the time they're in a corner, you should be in the opposite corner.
Gotcha.
And then same with the other two. So it's like you have a perfect square or diamond or however you're looking at it at all times. That's the goal. But then it gets pretty tough after
that. And it's like obviously a very physical exercise that you have to do.
Oh, yeah. So like it was weird because like, I don't know. Like I loved it there because it was cool. I had so much fun, and you know, I'm over here having fun, and then like, okay, so all right, so I don't mean like to go off in another tangent, but like when I was doing like our check-ins, like we had weigh-ins, and I looked down and I saw the clipboard and it said athletes, so it was like 1 through 20, and then it said indie workers 21 through 30 or whatever. I was like, oh come on, wow. I was like, I mean, I was in the Olympics. Does that count?
Yeah, so no kidding.
Like, I'm under indie worker, so which is I get it, but
well, so what are you saying that they had?
Well, no, so they put the like the former football players or CrossFit athletes. They were in the
athlete category,
which is funny because you'd be surprised how many NFL football players or former NFL football players can't do a forward roll.
or do the couple and they're done.
Dude, and just get up and leave, right?
Yeah. There's a few of them that like did and they couldn't do it. So they sit on the side to the next drill or whatever. There's a few that like we do these rolls up kind of thing for like, I don't know, like a minute or two. Like one of them, like, all right. And then Brookside would like, all right, get out of here. Go to the next ring. So you'd have to get out of the ring, sprint to the other ring and do the exact same rolls that we did. And I remember just being the next one in watching this football player went to grab the second rope to get out of the ring, missed it and went head first to the ground. I was like, it's an athlete, guys. It's an athlete.
Oh, that makes me laugh. I always used to laugh when the big bodybuilders and the big football guys would try and get into wrestling, you know, and you would just say like, dude, it's not what you think. You know, just because you can bench press 300 pounds doesn't mean you'll be a good wrestler. You'd always see that. I remember there was a couple Gronks idiots in the wrestling camp the second year when I was kind of helping train, my second year in the business, helping train, as ridiculous as that sounds. But I was doing weights, like curls with like, you know, 20 pounds or 25 pounds. And afterwards I heard, Jericho, he'll never make it. He's only curling 25 pounds. What a pussy. And then meanwhile, these guys were gone like 2 weeks later and they were curling 50 pounds. It's like, well, that didn't really work out too well for you.
And you're still there teaching guys.
Yeah. That's really interesting. Athletes and indie workers.
Yeah. Well. I mean, that was back in like the end of 2014. So I don't know if they changed the lingo or whatnot.
Right, but right.
I don't know. I haven't been there in a while.
Who are you looking forward to working with in Ring of Honor?
Definitely. Like I mentioned earlier, Jay Lethal. Yeah. Like just to see, again, he like, you know, his moniker is the franchise, but I mean, he is like the gatekeeper of Ring of Honor, you know? So he's been the champ for, I think they said like 600 plus days. So,
wow.
I mean, they're not just going to give it to anybody. So I'd love to work him because like I teamed with him and mm-hmm. it was so much fun, learned mm-hmm. so much, but yeah, guys like anybody I haven't had a chance to work with, I think, cause I will always want to, like, I never want to be in my comfort zone where, like, oh, well you like to throw big guys. Let's keep the big guys with you.
Right.
You
know, sure.
So I'm like, if I can just work everybody and try to see if I can tell a good story with
who
that
did
matchup.
You beat for the television title?
Punishment Martinez.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He went to NXT.
Yeah.
Now.
He's in NXT now.
He's a fairly big guy, right?
Yeah. He's like 6'6",
mm-hmm.
which is huge for me. I'm sure.
Yeah,
you know, I'm a good 6 footer like with my lifts.
A cigarette machine with a head on it, as my dad used to say.
Well, I like vending machine, but
yeah, you go right, vending machine. Is there even such thing as a cigarette machine now? I don't even know.
Probably not. I think those are illegal, probably.
As we wind down here, you mentioned you were a big fan when you were growing up. Who were some of your favorites?
I mean, it's a cliche word, a cliche name, but like Hulk Hogan drew me in mm-hmm. just as a kid. On a side note, Hulk Hogan, you owe me $9.95 because I took those dang vitamins. I bought them vitamins as a kid.
No kidding.
I didn't get big until after college.
And what were they?
The multivitamins.
Hulk Hogan brand multivitamins?
Yeah, it was like a chewable, like, you know, the Flintstones had those, but it was Hulk Hogan one. I bought them, man. I was like, oh. Come to find out years later, that's one of the vitamins.
That's what I was gonna say. Did it have a 50% D ball in it?
No, he didn't have. There was
vitamin A, vitamin B, D ball, and testosterone.
But yeah, so I bought them. So yeah, Hulk Hogan drew me in. Ultimate Warrior kept me, and then Heart Foundation. It's me and my neighbor backyard wrestle, like not backyard wrestle like crazy, but just we had wrestled invisible people, mm-hmm. and because he looked just like Anvil, and I was a lot smaller than, and then I had the Bret Hart shades, so I was Bret Hart. Ooh. I couldn't sell as good as him as a kid. But
it's interesting, like, you know, I was thinking about the other day when Gene Okerlund passed away. You know, you go back and watch some of the stuff mm-hmm. and go through it, and like, it's such a magical time at that point. You know, even though the matches weren't great, but just the characters and the personas, and being a kid that was so enamored, like, to me, it was all like Kiss and wrestling, and just like, it's like watching those old matches, it brings you back to when you were a kid, you know?
Well, I don't know, because again, perception is reality. Like when I was a kid, the biggest match I ever saw, and it was amazing. Like I was counting on the days for this in Toronto, Hogan and Warrior wrestled. It's like, oh my God, this is gonna be great. Then like 2015, I went to a buddy's house and we watched it. It was horrible. Like, Jake Roberts and Ted DiBiase had a match on the undercard. That was phenomenal.
Yeah.
But then now, like, as an adult, I'm like, ugh.
Well, those guys could work. That's the thing.
Right. But I didn't know that. I didn't know
about it. You didn't know it at the time. Like, even when you watch Andre the Giant versus Hulk, biggest match maybe of all time, it's not, or Rock versus Hulk. Mm-hmm. If you watch The Rock versus Hulk Hogan and turn the sound down, it's the worst.
Right.
You turn the sound up, it's amazing because people are so excited.
It's because of the probably the perceptions are like, oh my God, Hogan's wrestling The Rock. Or Hogan and Giant, what the hell?
But yeah.
No, yeah. Like going back, I'm like, oh gosh.
You know what's funny is I worked with Hulk a bunch in about 2002. He came back in. He was still pretty mobile. We had some really good. I would even venture to say there's a match that we had. There's two that we had on TV. I can't remember which one it was. It was probably his best match of the 2000s. Like or of his, like maybe even WCW on, like it was really good stuff. And the thing when working with him, he was really into working. Like, you know, he gave me a suplex off the second rope and I gave him a moonsault and he went for the big boot and I sweeped his legs to put him in the Walls of Jericho. But he said in these days now, like talking 2002, he's like, I'm working with everybody who's just trying to make me look good. Mm-hmm. And he goes, this is blowing my mind because it was never like this. And I go, what do you mean? He said, everyone was always trying to fuck you. Because, you know, he said, so those guys maybe weren't having good matches or didn't know how to have good matches, but didn't care because they were just trying to get one over on Hogan. Whereas when he came back in the modern era, our attitude is a lot different because, once again, no one's going to steal your spot. And he's like, I can't believe how much more fun I'm having, how much easier it is working with you guys because you'll actually work with me and make me look good.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Do you remember that helmet that he had that had a big fist on it that he wore for a while? If you Google it, you see the Hulk Hogan helmet. And the reason why he got it made is he said because it gave him a way to win. He said no one would take the leg drop in the pin. So he would be hitting him with this helmet that had a big fist on it. And I'm like, you were a babyface. He goes, yep.
Well, if it keeps you down, screw it. Hit him with a helmet.
There you go. Exactly.
Hit him with a helmet, brother.
It shows how things have changed, right? You know? Last question for you. What's your favorite match that you've ever had?
My favorite match?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Kind of rough. Rough question to ask.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it's one. Is the one that
you should have gave me this ahead of time. I could have done some homework.
Is there one that's there are a few that you think, oh, that was pretty damn cool?
I had one in England with my former tag team partner Matt Riddle.
Oh,
I definitely put that in like my top five of all time.
He's got a lot of steam right now. Yeah, a lot of buzz about him.
Yeah, so I'm happy for him, man. Like, I'm sad to see him go, but at the same time, hey.
Where were you guys tag team?
We were tagging PWG.
Gotcha.
They randomly put us together against the Bucks, and we had a great match there. And
oh wow!
And then our tag team was born there. But for some reason, nobody wanted to book us outside of PWG.
Hmm.
So whatever. No biggie.
Does he wrestle with the bare feet?
Yeah.
So is he an amateur guy as well?
Yeah. New York guy.
So. Wow.
Yeah, and then we just clicked from there. Mm-hmm. Like when we first met and we clicked and then we teamed and just dominated, killed people. So, in a nice way. But that Matt Riddle match is definitely up there. I had a really good one. And like I think he's super like underappreciated, like in a sense, but like a Drew McIntyre or whatever you want. Yeah.
Galloway. So,
like, yeah. Whatever you want to call him. Like, I don't know. He's just call him what he wants to be called.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think he's phenomenal, man.
Well, he did a great job, and that's what happens sometimes. He got fired and then goes through the system and ends up coming back so much better than he ever was. Because like we were talking earlier, he had a chance to go ride the roads and learn, get that life experience.
Yeah, so like we had a great one. He hits hard, but but I like those kind of style. Like,
sure.
I mean, don't kill me, but like.
Yeah, I always used to say, like, don't break my nose, don't knock out my teeth, but hit me as hard as you want other than that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I like it like that.
Yeah, exactly. Have you been to Europe at all to work, England or anything like that?
Yeah, so...
you just mentioned you worked.
Yeah, so I've wrestled a bunch in Europe, England. I like England just because it's so much fun, like like wrestling guys there because they have a different style than the quote-unquote American indies. Mm-hmm. So I love going there, man.
Much more of kind of a technical based in a lot of ways.
Yeah, so like every time I've gone there, I've gotten to wrestle like Zack Sabre a bunch of times and always like tries to stretch my... Zach, you realize I'm not flexible, man. But he tries it anyways.
Easy to stretch the vending machine. Not easy.
I'll just give you that Kit Kat if you want. Don't stretch me for it, brother.
Oh, dude, this is great, man. I'm glad we were able to make this happen, man.
Thank you for having me on, man.
It's very, very cool. Television champion right here. Do you have a nickname or is it just Jeff Cobb?
Just Jeff Cobb.
That's it. That's all you need. Yeah. No need for a nickname.
Yeah. NFK, NFN, I don't know.
There it is.
No need for a nickname.
There That's you cool. go. Thanks, dude.
Thank you.
Don't forget Jeff Cobb headlining for the World Heavyweight Championship, Ring of Honor versus Matt Taven at Best in the World. You can order that now on the Honor Club. Jeff's also going to be in Hamilton, Ontario on Sunday, Alpha One Wrestling. You get the details on his Twitter at Real Jeff Cobb. And don't forget Fighter Fest Saturday, June 29th, the next huge show from AEW. I believe you can get that on Bleacher Report Live, and you can find all that information. Now, it's a big, big weekend for wrestling, and a big time coming up for Fozzy as we're getting ready to rock the Incarnation Festival July 12th in Mansfield, Ohio, then doing a couple shows at Nickelback August 22nd in Uncasville, Connecticut, the Mohegan Sun Casino August 24th, Atlantic City, New Jersey at the Mark Itis Arena, and then Fozzy's Unleashed in the West tour kicking off in September. We're opening for Iron Maiden in Los Angeles on September 14th at the Bank of California Stadium, so we decided to book a whole tour around it, a Western tour. We're starting September 5th in Denver. We're hitting Colorado Springs, Grand Junction, Colorado, Salt Lake City, Utah, Crystal Bay, Nevada, San Francisco, California, Sacramento, California, Las Vegas, Nevada, San Diego, California, Tempe, Arizona, Tucson, Arizona, El Paso, Texas, Dallas, Texas, Houston, Texas, Hattiesburg, Mississippi, Atlanta, Georgia at the Masquerade September 28th. We got Jared James Nichols coming out with us. He's an amazing guitar player, up and comer. We toured Canada with him, had a great time. Sons of Texas joining us at the Texas gigs. All ticket info and gig information at FozzyRock.com. You can also get a VIP meet and greet package that we do before every show. One of the best in the business. Do a mini set just for you, a live concert just for you. We take pictures, we meet you, we greet you, we hang out. So come see Fozzy and be a Fozzy VIP. All that information at FozzyRock.com as well. And then we're getting down to the nitty-gritty. 90% sold of Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at C-Part 2, setting sail January 20th next year, 2020. Fozzy's going to be doing three different shows on the ship, including the big sail away set plus a cover set. Ric Flair is going to be the guest of honor. AEW, imagine all the stars from that's going to be there. We haven't even begun to announce those guys yet. NWO, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, X-Pac, Eric Bischoff is going to be there. Big podcast for those three. Big podcast with Ric Flair, a big live podcast with Jake the Snake Roberts, a Gathering of the Guerreros live podcast, Chavo Guerrero, Shaw Guerrero, and Vicky Guerrero. Booker T is doing his Hall of Fame podcast. Queen Sharmell is going to be joining him on that. MVP doing his one-man show. Brad Williams is our host. He's hilarious, great comedian. He was there last year. Jack Slade, Keeper of the Ice. Conrad Thompson is going to be there to do 83 Weeks Live with Eric Bischoff. Fozzy's playing, like I said, Farewell to Fear, Kick-Ass, Killer Queens, the world's greatest female queen cover band. Rubik's Cube is going to be there, the best 80s cover band you've seen. Dave Spivak Project is back. Jared James Nichols, Dark Sky Choir, so many great bands. DDP is going to be there doing his workshops live on the ship, Beyond the Darkness, hosting more creepy paranormal events. So many crazy things. The Sarah Tiana and Bruce Jingles are going to be there to make you laugh. We got more guests to be announced, more wrestlers to be announced, autograph signings, picture taking. Listen, I don't really have to sell this to you too much more. If you haven't got your cabin yet, you're waiting, don't wait any longer. This is legit. We are 90% sold out. By the way we're going, we'll probably be sold out completely in the next, I'd say, 4 to 6 weeks. So if you want to come with us, don't wait. ChrisJerichoCruise.com, and we will see you there for the vacation of a lifetime. All right, coming up on Friday, celebrating Canada Day with the biggest Canadian band of all time, and you might not have even heard of them. They're called the Tragically Hip. We're talking all about the Hip, why they are so massive in Canada. We're talking a stadium band in Canada and never really had much of a penetration worldwide. If you're Canadian, you're going to love it. If you're not Canadian, you're going to love it. The biggest band you've never heard of, the Tragically Hip, celebrating Canada Day on Friday. We'll see you then. Stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big Yeah, boy!